Steve is a SaaS sales podcaster and expert. Working hard is necessary, but unless you're effective, you could just be spinning your wheels. Getting your head right and maintaining balance in both your life and your pipeline isn't always easy. Our guest, Steve Underwood, understands this and has some awesome thoughts about making the sale while keeping your mindset right. After starting out in the auto industry selling cars, he's now an account executive with a project management software company called Workfront. In this podcast, Steve reveals the importance of role definition in sales and development, actionable tips for building a predictable pipeline, and how to document your calls and keep the process moving smoothly. Hi, everybody. It's Meredith Tyler, and I'm here with Steve Underwood. Steve is going to talk to us today about his experience in sales and things that he feels are important to know. And as you guys are listening, wanted to let you know, too, that we'll be transcribing this conversation. I'm sure there's going to be quite a few nuggets in here that you'll be able to pick up. And I'll also be putting some key things that I learned in, as much as, you know, we all do certain types of sales. We're all in certain types of verticals and certain types of markets. So we can learn from each other and how to better present the sales conversation to our clients and prospects. And Steve is here to tell us about how he goes about his business and also to share things that he's learned along the way that he thinks are of value. So welcome, Steve.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so you're in Southern California boy, right? You're down in San Diego way?
I am, yeah. I'm in Oceanside, California, which is in San Diego County.
Okay, and are you originally from that area, or did you transplant?
I'm a transplant. I grew up in Arizona and lived for a couple of years in Ukraine, of all places. And
wow.
Kind of bounced back and forth between Utah and Southern California. I think it might have stuck, though.
Yeah, you like it where you are at.
You know, more importantly than me liking it, my wife likes it, which means I'm really stuck.
There you go. Is she from the area as well?
No, she's actually from South Carolina, but okay. She loves the beach and the kids love the beach, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah, very good. So tell us how you started in this wonderful career that we're all in love with called sales.
I appreciate the opportunity to share that. So I kind of have sales running in the veins. My dad was a car dealer in Arizona. And so he was a general manager and part owner of a Ford, Lincoln, Mercury, Pontiac, Buick, and GMC dealer, wow. Which is kind of an interesting mix of brands.
Yeah, combo. But,
I grew up working around the dealership, you know, started emptying trashes there and worked washing cars and whatever else. But I remember when I was 8 years old, my dad had some friends come in. They were going to buy a red Aerostar van. And, you know, we got out the big, you know, shoulder mounted video camera and whatever. And I did a walkthrough for them. I did the whole walk around demo of the van, and oh, look, you have air conditioning. By the way, we live in Arizona. That might be important, you know, that sort of thing. And I was kind of hooked. I knew from a very, very early age that I wanted to do sales. And so that was kind of the trajectory that I went on. I've focused on presentation and speaking for years. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to be exposed to a few different languages. So I love languages and talking with people. And so I did the car sales thing from when I was 16 all the way through. I took a couple of breaks, a couple of years when I lived in Ukraine, but I came back, got married. And for the first year and a half of our marriage, I was selling cars. And my wife goes, look, you know, the money's great, but you're out like 70 hours a week. Let's find something different. So that's when I transitioned into technology sales.
So technology sales. Wow. Is it a similar environment for you, or do you feel that it's 180 from the car sales that methodologies that you learned there?
You know, it is very, very different, but you know, there's going to be things that are analogous. I feel like my experience in car sales really actually gave me a very, very strong foundation for the rest of my career in sales. When you have to focus on building a relationship with person to lead up into a transaction that takes place, you know, a half hour from now, and you know, you rely, or rather your family relies on your negotiating skills in order to eat, that you really start to hone those skills. So one of the things that I've been very blessed with and that I've honed over the years is my ability to negotiate. And that's really gotten me where I am. I have a lot of success because of that.
Okay. The other thing that I'll share with the group, that in my limited knowledge of car salesmanship, is the concept of habit. I mean, you have a very difficult job when you're in that type of sale, but you've got to be consistent and you've got to, you know, continue to do the things you need to do in blocks of time in order to create the sales that you need. So I'm sure that as you brought your skills into technology, was habit as well as negotiation a big part of what you brought over?
It was. The other thing that I focus on, I make it a habit to look at what is the 20% of my activities that are delivering 80% of the results. Mm-hmm. And then I try to use more of my time doing that sort of activity. So whereas I do work hard, but I try to work hard on the most effective things. You know, there's a difference between efficiency and effectiveness, right?
Yes.
Efficiency is being able to do a lot of things. Effectiveness is being able to do the most important things. And so I try to spend my time doing the most important things and the things that bring value to my employer and my customers. And that has really served me.
So do you focus on the entire pipeline? Because a lot of what, you know, when you think Mary Lou Tyler, it's sales process, but it's also just top of funnel. So it would be from starting conversations with people we don't know, taking it all the way through to what we call a sales qualified opportunity. Tell us about your typical sales pipeline and if you cover all roles.
Yeah, so in my company, we are very blessed as account executives to be able to have a very strong lead development and account development team. So they are doing a great job of filling up our funnel. I do a lot through social media, LinkedIn, and you know, we have LinkedIn Sales Navigator. So I do have accounts that I go and I engage with, but the vast majority of my pipeline comes from those folks that are feeding me and filling up that top of the funnel. But I engage with them from the handoff call from the ADM, or the account development manager. Mm-hmm. And I do my own discovery call, schedule a demo. And, you know, if we have to do multiple demos, we can do that. Face-to-face conversations, we can do that. Negotiations, contracts, legal, all that. And then I actually own the account through the first year and then hand it off after that first renewal to a corporate account development team that manages expansions from there.
Okay, so you mentioned a couple of things I want to share with the group. One is that it sounds like there are distinctive roles, so I'm going to ask you more about that. But you also have account managers at the end of it all. So, and you mentioned that renewal, so are we talking a SaaS product primarily that you're involved with in technology sales?
That's right. So my company that I work for is called Workfront. They're based out of Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. And they do a work management software that focuses on marketers and also on project managers to be able to get collaboration and help the whole team be more effective and efficient. Mm-hmm. So it is a SaaS software. We're entirely cloud-based. And that presents some interesting challenges as well as, some great benefits. We know from Salesforce that the deferred revenue model is a little bit tricky, but if you have the right amount of renewals, if your clients are happy, then it can be extremely profitable for both sales reps and for the company. And that's the way we run things. It's entirely cloud-based, and being that is the case, you know, we're not setting up an array of servers for the client and having them sign a contract and walk away. We have to make sure that customer satisfaction and customer success is stressed from day one through, you know, second year, third year, fourth year, fifth year, because clients really can just vote with their wallet. If they don't mm-hmm. like it, they go away.
That's true. Tell us about the handoff piece. One of the things that being out in the field with clients, when we're introducing this, what we call separation of roles, where we have a business development team, we may even have a marketing business development team that follows up on what we call inbound leads, which are marketing qualified leads. What was the biggest challenge that you saw in getting that set up so that what the business developers create for you has quality throughout?
I think sometimes there can be a little bit of a conflict of interest. Whereas the sales reps, we don't make money on these things unless they close. So they have to be a real opportunity. The account developers don't make any commissions or any money off it unless they get a qualified lead. So I think sometimes there can be this tendency to maybe toss over something that is less qualified. Mm-hmm. So we had to do some training, but it's also helping the account executives and the business development reps to understand who their customer really is. I have three customers, right? I have my employer, certainly a customer. Mm-hmm. I have my client, and I have my account development folks, and really the other people that I partner with internally. But I want these guys to be successful. I want to make an impact on their career so that, you know, they work with me for 6 months or 12 months, and then they can move on into, you know, whatever other field they want to move on. Or if they want to stay there and continue being successful, that is something that I want for them. So I do weekly mentoring with these guys. We do strategy. We look at the templates that they're using. We look at the industries we're approaching, the specific accounts we're targeting. We look at messaging. We look at, you know, what are the case studies that would resonate with these types of customers, and how can we craft a campaign? So I'm very, very involved with them and try to help them be successful on every level.
Yes. And I think one of the other learning points for the listener here is that Steve said he does this on, did you say a weekly basis or is it biweekly?
Yeah. That's
and
a weekly basis.
That's a key component of creating a predictable pipeline, is to be able to constantly go back, review the sales conversations that are working, because that is going to drive what your messaging looks like. It's going to drive how you place the conversations depending on when people are entering the pipeline. And it also gives the business development team a confidence level that they're going to be passing over, and what they pass over will actually be accepted by people like
right.
Steve. That's a big, big thing. And we strive for a 90% acceptance rate from the people who are developing the original lead, the sales qualified lead, to what's accepted. So can you help us understand what percentage got are, like, if I do 10 qualified opportunities for you, Steve, how many of those actually make it to acceptance?
You know, with the guys that I work with, mm-hmm. usually 10. I mean, if we'd have to,
that's
we'd
awesome.
Have to get a much broader sample size to, you know, to mm-hmm. decrease that, because it's not going to be 100%. I mean, there are going to be those that just aren't a fit, that maybe felt like it to the ADM, but these guys recognize that I'm not here to disqualify their stuff. I will do everything I can to bring it into the funnel, as long as there really is an opportunity there. So they're passing me really quality stuff. And we've got a great working relationship. They recognize that I am their customer, and they need my trust in order to be successful. And for the most part, they have it. They do a fantastic job. And frankly, that's a really, really hard job they do. So I try to make it as rewarding and easy as possible.
It can be a very difficult job, but because you are going back to them with regularity and sharing with them what you're encountering in the sales process and the, you know, the actual conversations you're having further into the pipeline, it can only make them stronger and more confident mm-hmm. to be able to turn better leads to you. But it's what I really want to emphasize here. It's not a set it and forget it. It's constantly going back. Do you role play with them as well? Or do you just review together as a team? Tell us about that review process that you go through.
So I haven't role played with them. I'd like to start. I just reviewed Predictable Revenue. Actually, I was listening to it last night on audiobook as I was working on my truck. So I got through the entire thing.
Wow.
And so the role playing and things, those are things that I'd like to start to do. But I do the weekly reviews with them where we go over the things that I already talked about. But I also do postmortems on each and every call. Right after mm-hmm. the call finishes up, I call them and I get their thoughts. And mostly I really focus on kind of drawing out of them, what can I do to be better? What can I do to make you more successful? What thoughts do you have on that call? If it was you on my side of the desk, how would you have handled that differently? Would you have focused on anything else? And a lot of these guys are going, and I think they view themselves as junior, but I look at these guys and they're not junior. They do very good work in a very mm-hmm. hard job. And, you know, maybe they have aspirations to be an account executive. A lot of them do. And I will help them along the way. But I really try to get them to put themselves in my shoes and understand how they could do what I do in their own way. Mm-hmm. So it's that postmortem coaching that happens on every single call. And then the other thing I do is if it's an opportunity, I convert it right then. So it's, you know, it's an opportunity right after, you know, 5 minutes after the call is over, it's converted. So they don't have to wait. And that immediate gratification for a job well done is something that I think is extremely valuable.
And that's yet another learning point that we discover as we're helping clients is that the what we call a management by objective, MBO, when a business developer turns over an opportunity, the AE has to respond within a certain period of time. And it sounds like you're just way on top of that one, which is great, because a lot of times if the leads sit, they'll get colder and colder and colder. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you follow up right away, even though it sounds like that's a Steve thing as opposed to a company mandated, that is going to also add to reducing the lag in the pipeline as you get further in.
Yeah. So you have a company SLA on it. The mm-hmm. SLA is 2 hours.
Okay.
But I just had an EDM talk to me the other day. She goes, man, thank you so much for converting that so quick. I've got guys that I've been chasing since March 4th or 5th that still haven't. I'm like, that's 3 weeks ago. That is nuts.
I know. It just doesn't work. So these are little nuggets we're learning from Steve as you're considering how to put a process in place. There are definite levers. There are definite checkpoints. There are definite time-sensitive handoff points that you want to make sure that are in your pipeline methodology so that people like Steve can take that ball and run to the close with it at a lot higher conversion rate. So tell us, Steve, once it gets into the pipeline, let's pretend that you have a closed lost. What, if any, conversations do you use with the closed lost on your team to learn from that and maybe change some of the messaging or change some of the methodologies as you start grinding through a lot more of these opportunities, especially when it comes to closed loss? I'm curious to hear how you manage those.
You know, that is a great question. I'm going to have to talk to how I would do this in an ideal world. My direct manager left for a VP level role at a different company back in January. Mm-hmm. And my new one doesn't actually start until the end of June. So we've been without a team lead for a long time, which has really caused some interesting things to happen on the team itself. But the way I would do that, if I were the director over the team or if I was participating in it, I would go back and I'd look at the whole cycle. You know, how do we set this up from the very beginning? Because I feel like from that very first conversation, it's as if you're drawing back the bow and letting the arrow fly, right? Mm-hmm. You can't change the trajectory of that arrow mid-flight. So really the negotiations, the closing starts on that first call. There has to be a mutual respect there. And as you go back and you look over at the conversations, you look at your notes, which, by the way, for any sales reps that may be listening, any managers that may be listening, I would strongly encourage you to take copious notes throughout the process. You know, have your CRM tool open and actually document what happens on each and every conversation, because that will help you, especially as you start working 10, 15, 20 opportunities, whatever that number is, so you can circle back around and remember what happened on that last conversation. Like Aaron said in the book, you know, sales reps have a reputation for being ADD. if you're not documenting those conversations, you're going to forget about them and you're going to get derailed. But also document and kind of point out somehow, maybe have a different field available in Salesforce that shows you what was the initial challenge that they came to you with. And on every conversation, circle back and go, okay, are we getting closer to addressing this challenge with you? Do you feel like this is something that's going to work? Because as you continue to bang on that drum, it gets them away from the feature functionality comparison that often happens. So back to your question about how I would handle the close lost, I go back and I review the notes. I review the conversations. And a lot of times I can point to a very specific conversation that happened either over the phone or face-to-face where I lost the deal. Mm. You know, I was listening to a podcast recently between Tim Ferriss and Josh Waitzkin. And they were talking about these elite athletes where, you know, they're no longer looking to shave off, you know, a 10% improvement or anything. Now they're down to the 0.5% improvement, right? And you're a millimeter away from ultimate success or complete failure. Mm-hmm. Right. So I feel like, and I'm not a professional athlete. I'm not a, I feel like I'm good at what I do and I'm just barely getting to the point where I can identify that's where I lost it. That was it right there.
That's awesome though. And I love your, another teaching point about note taking. My background originally was in contact center. So this is before the internet. That's how long I've been around. But what we did there, we had a predictive dialing system. And that's what I love about meeting up with Aaron back in 2008 when we first got together, or 2009, was that when I was, you know, looking through what he had done for Salesforce, it reminded me a lot of contact center. And the predictable, mm-hmm. the predictable revenue model looked a lot like predictive dialing model. But the difference was on predictive dialers, whenever you disposition that call, so it has to be filed somewhere. And in order to file it, you have to wrap it up. So what I teach my folks now is every call, as you said, has to be wrapped up. And it takes 30 seconds to a minute to do so. And the other thing that we do is we put codes, because Salesforce is not necessarily, or CRMs are not necessarily set up for distinctive fields for wrap-up, nor do we want to overwhelm the salesperson. So we teach them a couple of basic codes that they would put in the first position of a comment that are going to tell us whether we're on track. So for the pain point, like you mentioned, their original challenge, there is a checkpoint on that wrap-up. Are we still aligned with the original challenge, or has it gone sideways? And if it's gone sideways, big red flag, right? So we need to get them circled back in again. The other thing we did is, in wrap-up, is we get sentiment. You know, what was the sentiment of the call? How did you react to the questions? How was the customer's reaction? And, you know, again, very brief, 1 to 2 words, and that's it. And then the last thing we do is we put something for keyword analysis for the marketing people, because if they're using language that you hadn't heard before, or they're saying things phrase-wise that didn't sound like you've heard before, we want to know that on that from that call. So those are the kinds of things we wrap up. And like I said, it takes 30 seconds to a minute, sometimes 3 minutes if you're really being detailed. But if you're having 3 to 5 meaningful conversations a day, that's not a lot of time out of your day to do that type of wrap-up call. And yeah. The data that we collect from that is just gold, because we can do a qualitative analysis on it. We can do phrase analysis and frequency analysis just by running a simple report and dumping it into these analysis tools that are available now on the internet. So I love that you're doing that.
You know, I would be very interested to see kind of a screenshot of something you get out of that. That sounds, I think, maybe it was a different conversation I had this morning, but I am a total nerd. I think most guys are kind of techie, you know, right. But I'm an absolute nerd, and I used to be in the closet about it, but I've come out, I'm a nerd. And so those sorts of things just really fascinate me.
Yeah. And most of the people that I'm attracted to are, because I'm an engineer as well. So we love data, we love numbers, but now we love words and text, because you know, we can take the qualitative data, and there's analyses, free analysis all over the place that you can run word and frequency analysis and get 2, 3, 4, 5 word analysis to see if there's anything common. And that feeds right back to marketing so that they can start really being and living in the mind of the buyer. And because you're tracking along the way what stage you were at when you had these conversations, then they can, you know, prime up the right content at the right time with the right message to the right buyer.
It's beautiful. That's a very, very sophisticated marketing department and a sophisticated organization that can do all of that. But if you are in an organization that has that sort of capability, you are very, very fortunate. That's incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, having said that, what have we been using in the olden days? Excel to track a lot of that. So we basically feed in, you know, the information that we want. We outline the stages as columns, and then pretty much the rows are the different types of things we want to be aware of when we hit that stage for that buyer. Yeah. So, it's just really, and it's fun. It's fun to do. And like you said, if you do these analyses often enough, then you're going to really create a reduction of lag. And that's really, I don't know if you remember, page 42 of the Predictable Revenue book is a formula that I have lived my life by. And I wrote a second book based on that formula, which is the predictable revenue is the funnel itself. So the pipeline plus the average deal size plus time. And all the things we've been talking about just now reduce lag. And time is a killer in terms of creating conversations with people we don't know, taking it all the way to close.
Yep. And all these little tools. Time kills all deals.
Yeah. There you go. Well, in closing, we're kind of running out of time here. I wanted to make sure that you shared with the audience, you know, everything that you want to share. And also, how do we get a hold of you if the people are like, wow, I like what Steve's doing, I'd love to have a chat. How do we get a hold of you for that?
Yeah. How much time do we have? I want to make sure that...
I usually like to keep somewhere between 18 and 22 minutes for a podcast call. So, because, you know, as we know, we're driving, we're going places. So sometimes we don't have a lot of time.
Okay. I'll do my best. So, you know, I wanted to talk about a couple of things, and then I'll tell the group or the audience here how they can hear more, learn more about me.
Sure.
I think that our mindset in our profession, or really in our life, in general, is huge. That is something that I am keying in on right now in a very big way. And when I talk about mindset, it is as broad as you can imagine. Everything from, okay, I'm going to envision how this sales call goes, and I'm going to envision the outcome that I want, and try to help that come into place. Or first thing in the morning, you reset your mindset and make sure that you're focusing on positive things and being grateful. Everything from that to, I mean, there's been studies done where they've taken groups of people and they had a control group that did a workout and just kind of a typical thing. They had a controlled workout. They had another group that they had a meditation regime where they would have them focus on their physical body and how they would like that body to develop, you know, whether it's more muscle, fat loss, skin tone, I mean, everything.
Wow.
And they would focus on that. And they found that and that group, by the way, did no workout routine. They found that that group that just did the meditation and worked on the mindset achieved 90% of the results as the group that had a controlled workout routine.
Wow.
Again, they never hit the gym. And, you know, if anybody in the room here wants to start a look at that, I'll share with you some tips that I learned from Gerhard Schwattner. He's the CEO of Selling Power Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Just a wonderful, wonderful man. If you want to affect your mindset, that's AFFECT. So actually have an affect on your mindset. I want you to go ahead and reach your both arms up above your head and put your hands in fists, kind of like in the victory stance, right? And just hold that there for 30 seconds. And this is your physiological state affecting your emotional state. So if you'll do that, you'll start to see a difference in your mood. Another thing you can do is you can go for a 5-minute walk outside. And as you're out there, notice the smells, notice the sights, notice the sounds, and be really present on that walk. Again, 5 minutes. And the third thing you can do is keep a gratitude journal. And, you know, this could be something like I use the 5-minute journal. It's fantastic. You could certainly just use a spiral notebook and write down 3 things you're grateful for, whatever. But those things will have a huge impact. And I think, let's see here, another podcast, maybe it was in the book. You'll have to correct me, Mary Lou, but the concept of being our poor and year rich.
That wasn't in the book, but I like it.
Okay. So we tend to, you know, we look at our lives and we go, oh man, we've got 10 things we need to fix or more, right? Mm-hmm. And we go, okay, I'm going to do all these things, right? This is why New Year's resolutions fail.
Right.
Because we have 5 of them, right?
Right.
But if you will take on an hourly basis or on a daily basis and go, okay, I'm going to focus on this little thing, right? Your mastery over that little thing over the minutes and the hours and the days will have an enormous impact on your years.
That's awesome. So, I the gratitude one, another thing I'll add to that I do and before I get out of bed, so I'm still lying down, and if a dog isn't sitting on me trying to wake me up, I am lying down, and before I open my eyes, I think about 5 people in my life for whom I am grateful to have known. Mm-hmm. And I thank them for whatever it is and let them know I'm grateful, and then I get out of bed.
That's wonderful.
So I'll add to that. And the gratitude journal too is wonderful too. So all these things, you know, it's so true about getting out in nature. It's so true about doing that victory. I've heard that before, and it does lift your spirits. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're in a tough profession. We are not necessarily seen as a noble group of folks at times. So it's, you know, but this profession has given back for me. I mean, it's just the most fun I've ever had is in this field. And coming from engineering, I feel blessed that at the time I got into it, I had no option because we were selling disruptive technology. The reps who were selling at the time walked in one day, they were all fired, and the engineers were told, okay, now you're salespeople. You know, like put a little pat on your head. You are a little wand on your head. You are now a salesperson.
So, bippity boppity boo.
Yeah, so that's how we got into it. So I love that. No, I think mindset is a big thing. Do you have any reading materials? I know you mentioned The One Gentleman. Anything else that you follow that you might want to share with our group as to if they want to learn more about that?
About mindset. Well, I do talk about that some on my podcast and blog.
Okay. So
my blog is kicksasssales.com. K-I-C-K-SAS, like software as a service. So it's S-A-A-S, mm-hmm. sales, plural, kicksasssales.com. You can also listen to my podcast there. So I talk about mindset a lot just because, again, I'm a total nerd. But there are some other things out there. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I read that every year. That's one of my New Year's things that I do is I reread that book.
Yep. How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's an oldie mm-hmm. but a goodie.
Yep.
There are a couple other ones. The Miracle Morning for Salespeople.
Really I haven't heard of that one.
Mm-hmm. That one's fantastic. Those are the kind of things that I'm into. The other things that I do, frankly, I'm a Christian, and I don't know if you talk much about spirituality, but mm-hmm. I try to start off every morning in prayer and reading a little bit of scripture. And so those kinds of things really affect my mindset in a huge way.
Right. No, I mean, I think all of those things are very important because, you know, balance is a very important thing. And so whatever we need to do to have that balance, but keep it as a ritual, as a morning routine, whatever you want to call it, habit. I mean, if you do these things every day, then your body settles into a really nice rhythm so that when you do get on the phone with people, and I can tell just by speaking with you that I'm sure your clients must adore you, you know, and because you're just so calm and confident and helpful. And that all comes across just in the way you speak. So it's awesome.
Well, I have some that love me and some that don't talk to me. So probably like most of them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, very good. Well, Steve, I'll put for everyone listening, Steve's contact information inside of the show notes and his podcast. And, you know, you should really hop on there and download that as part of your listening education as you work through how to better yourself in your career, in your life, whatever it is that you're looking to do. Thank you so much for your time, Steve. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Oh, it was absolutely my pleasure.